The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
When it comes to public transport here in Ireland, we always seem to be a bit slow in catching up with the latest trends. We are seeing some progress now for Metrolink. The Lewis Line has plans to expand, and soon we'll be bringing in contactless payments. By soon, I mean possibly 3 years. Tony Canavan is EY's global transport leader, an expert in transport and the infrastructure sector, and he's with me in studio to talk about the challenges we face here and how we might resolve them. Tony, good morning and welcome.
Morning, Pat.
I could not have picked a better day for you to come in here when the city's at a standstill.
No, apparently not. That seems to be the times we live in. I'm from Victoria in Australia, yep. And today is the hottest day ever.
Oh, really?
In the state of Victoria.
Oh, my goodness.
So in Victoria, we're surrounded by bushfires. We had floods last week, cars washing off into the ocean. And here we are in Dublin with cars floating around as well.
Now, the question of transport solutions, I'm a great fan of looking online at what the Chinese do, and they are remarkable. I mean, they'll build tunnels, they'll build metros, high-speed rail. They have a huge network of high-speed rail. They seem to be very innovative. What is it about the rest of the world that can't do that?
Well, you're right about China. I mean, what China has done with its high-speed rail network over the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years has been absolutely phenomenal, history-making probably. And you're right, it's true that they are a bit of an outlier when it comes to being able to keep momentum going on their rollout of their infrastructure.
Is it because of the political system?
I think that
helps.
You
know, if you get in the way, you're just pushed aside and they build anyway.
I think that helps, obviously. And they have, you know, they have money, they have manpower, and they've invested heavily in technology, and they're reaping the rewards from it, and now they're exporting it to the world.
And that's a question, I suppose, that we should come to when it comes to building Metrolink. What's the likelihood that a Chinese company who can do this kind of thing would come in and do it for us?
Well, they'll be in the mix. I mean, from my experience in, from Australia, for example, in Singapore, where I've lived for the last 6 years, Chinese companies are often involved in consortia. They're not necessarily the only ones, but they bring that expertise. They build a lot of rolling stock. They're very good at that. They have the plant and equipment. So it's something to be considered alongside the expertise that will come from other countries as well. So I would not be surprised if they expressed interest.
Now, in Melbourne, your home city, you have a pretty good system between rail and trams. People around fairly efficiently or not?
Well, like most cities, the people who live there don't tend to speak as positively about their own transport. I think that might be true here as well, Pat. But Melbourne stacks up compared to other cities, particularly when you're travelling from, you know, parts of the city into the centre.
Okay.
Then the options are really there across the different modes of transport. When you're moving around in a more orbital fashion, then, you know, cars still tend to dominate.
Yeah. And how often would you have literally a logjam, a standstill in Melbourne?
There's still plenty of roads where those standstills happen. What I've observed over the last 10, 15 years is those logjams have moved out of the centre into the outer suburbs. Mm. It used to be the closer you were to the middle, the more congestion, but there's fewer and fewer cars making that trip now.
What is the solution then? Is it that you densify the city, more people live in the city centre, and you make it easy for people to get around? Is that it?
I think you've hit the nail on the head in that there is a direct relationship between where people live and work and what that means for the transport system itself. It's symbiotic between the two. Yes, Melbourne has seen a huge increase in the population in the city itself, in the inner suburbs.
Which it probably explains why it's a great social city, is it not?
Yes, it's certainly come to life in my lifetime compared to what it was when I was a young boy. But there are still suburbs growing fast in Melbourne, as they are in Dublin, on the outer fringes, that are crying out for more frequent public transport. And that's always the big challenge.
What are your observations of Dublin then, since you arrived here?
Well, look, it's a congested city, mostly for, I think, legacy reasons.
It's an old, it's a Viking city originally, and then a medieval city.
That's right. All the things you love about Dublin are also the reasons why it's difficult to solve some of its transport issues. Narrow streets, it's hard to eke out more road space and so on. But I would have to say that in recent times, there's been a lot of investment now going into public transport, and the trajectory is heading in the right direction, but a long way to go.
When I read the stats, I mean, you look at a bus and it has maybe, when it's crammed to the gills, it's got maybe 120 people on a bus. And we're talking about Metrolink will be moving up to, well, starting with 20,000 people an hour. How many buses is that? You know, how can buses ever do the job that a metro will do? And ultimately, Metro could be moving 60,000 people an hour. How many buses would it take to do that? So buses are not the long-term solution.
Yes, it's horses for courses. Different modes of transport meet different journey type needs. And there are corridors that need to be your big arteries of movement. And then there's all the other movements that better fit the bus network as opposed to the mass transit. You need a mixture of them all.
Are there any quick fixes? I mean, I'm often frustrated by cars, and bearing in mind we drive on the left, that are allowed to turn right at the next junction. Which means that basically anyone, if it's only a single lane, everyone behind that person who's trying to get around a corner is stuck, which inhibits the flow.
There's always a lot more you can do with what you've already got. So often all of the discussion is dominated by the next big project, but there's always something more that you can do with what you've already got. And I think the big concept that has to take hold is this transport network that we have, including the roads, including the Lewis tracks and so on and so forth, is designed to move people, not vehicles. And if you have vehicles with just a sole occupant in them, they are in a different part of the hierarchy to vehicles that have multiple people in them, and that includes the pedestrians on the street and so on and so forth. And so with the road space that we got, when you take that mindset about, well, what's the best way to move the largest number of people through that, then you start to think about, well, what kind of limitations do we need to place?
So you have to be very brave, you're saying.
You have to be brave.
Yeah. Now, sometimes it'll discommode people who used to maybe park outside their own house, and they're being told, you know, buy an EV, but if I give my parking space over to a Dublin bus, I can't have an EV.
Yeah, well, I can't speak for every person's situation, obviously, Pat, but I think the answer to this is there is a hierarchy of corridors, as I alluded to earlier. Some require that hard decision to say, this is the key artery where I have to give priority to moving large numbers of people. And in other places, you do the exact opposite, where you say, this area is about living and about people, you know, the community and so on. And you plan the space around.
So basically,
that.
The message is, if you want to buy a sofa, you're not going to buy it in Dublin City Centre. In the future, you'll have to buy it in the burbs, because you're not going to get the sofa on a tram.
No, look, I mean, again, people have travelled around. You've been to the medieval cities of European cities and so on and so forth. They still get deliveries in and out. It often happens during nighttime or at times of day when there are less people moving around. All the needs can be met, but now, it's about being sensible.
Are there any kind of simple theoretical solutions? For example, we don't use tunnelling here very much at junctions. In Paris, centre of Paris, historic Paris, there are tunnels pretty much everywhere to ease the congestion at junctions.
You're talking about road tunnels now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because they realise that people do have to get from A to B, and they have to cross Paris. Even if you're the Sparks with a load of equipment in the back of your van, you got to do it. You can't do it on the metro.
Yeah, I live in Melbourne, and over the last 7 or 8 years, we've removed something like more than 100 level crossings where railway lines cross roads and separated them so that both the trains and the cars can move through. Sometimes that means going under the ground. Sometimes it means going up in the air. It's going to depend on that, you know, with the part of the city and the layout and so forth. But you know, there's not a great history of tunnelling so far. I think that's about to change in Dublin, but definitely part of the solution.
Well, I hope that when we next have our next conversation, that things will have improved, although I'm a bit of a sceptic when it comes to that. Tony, thank you very much for joining us. Tony Canavan is EY's global transport leader, and obviously he's going to offer some solutions for Dublin going forward.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.